talking with Dee Vaughn, of course, from Dumas, Texas. And Dee, first of all, tell us just a little bit about the group that you mentioned today, the Southwest Council, that includes several states, actually.
It's a five-state organization. It's Southwest Council of Agribusiness. It's a relatively young organization. We've been around since 2007. And the brainchild behind it was that, or the thought behind it was that we would go and realize that farm policy is not just for producers. It is about lenders. It's about Main Street businesses. It's about communities. And so we decided to come together as a group and that work on farm policy and work to build a political base for our region of the country. And it's been very successful. We've been able to build a large coalition, like I say, 17 farm groups and lending organizations and Main Street businesses.
Your core message today to the House Agriculture Committee?
Our core message is we need price protection in the farm bill. We're not opposed. We certainly support options for different producers, different regions of the country. We commend the chairman of the House Ag Committee for working on a consensus bill last fall that did that. It provided for the necessary safety net for all producers, all crops, all regions of the country. And we just want to support him in that effort. We want to, that's our main thing, is we just want to be able to have a good farm bill for everyone. And for us, it's price protection.
Interesting comments or conversation you had with him during the hearing regarding the letter that came from the corn growers and others regarding some farm policy positions they've got. You said you didn't necessarily agree with the national group.
Well, it's disheartening because at a time when, you know, agriculture is the shining example of our economy right now. I mean, it's the one thing that's hitting on all eight cylinders and moving forward. And because of that, or the reason for that, is because we've had stable farm policy for many years in the United States. And here we are. We need to be getting all the groups together to work on this next farm bill so we extend that stable farm policy for 5 years. And we have groups out here that are drawing lines in the sand and saying, well, it's got to be this way or no way. And we need to be coming together and compromising and agreeing to offer choices to producers from around the different parts of the country that as they need them.
Let me ask you about the revenue concept. When you step back and look at it, you're guaranteeing, what, 87 or 85, 90% of revenue that folks have been having the last 5 years. There are a lot of people out there in the taxpaying world who would say, you know, you guys have had pretty good revenues the last 5 years. That doesn't seem like that's a definition of a safety net. Would you all concur?
Well, that is one of the issues, is that, you know, a lot of guys in different portions of the country can buy 75 to 85% crop insurance. It's very affordable for them. And then if they stack these revenue plans to get another 8 to 12% protection on top of that, they're taking pretty much all the risk out of their operations. And, you know, it's kind of a, you have to wonder, you know, if I'm an investor and I've got a CD that's drawing what it is today, basically nothing, and I see some farmland over here that could be bought, and I could get a nice return off the production, I can get a nice return off the appreciation, and I can insure my revenue for 90 or plus percent, well, that's nearly a no-brainer. And so it's got to be driving land cost and stuff like that. And that's just unintended consequence we need to avoid.
This seems to be really a direct payment almost every year to some regions of the country in a different way.
It really is, to a certain extent, because, you know, it's pretty, you know, we've learned for years that to deal with 10, 15, 20% swings in our revenue. And now we want to be able to make it where producers can draw a payment when they can have a 10% or more. So that's just, you know, we don't feel like that's really the way to go, but possibly a shallow loss program, you know, is needed by some producers. And if that's the case, well, we would support that option as long as they support price protection as part of the, for the rest of us.
One very common theme today was the need for basically leave crop insurance alone.
Absolutely. The crop insurance program is working very well. Regardless of where the Senate and House Ag Committees have had hearings, they've told, producers have said, you know, do no harm to the farm or the crop insurance program. In 2011, we had the historic drought there in Texas where I live, and it's, you know, if it hadn't been for crop insurance and that, we wouldn't have made it through it. And it's the only thing that's keep a lot of for sale signs from being out in front of farms today.
The GAO study, would it do harm?
Oh, absolutely. As I said in questioning by the chairman, it was the size of farm that it would preclude us down to would be we would just have so much production that it would just be uninsurable. We'd be over the limit. Farms in our area, because of the efficiency of scale necessary, you know, we'd have substantial portions of our farm we just wouldn't be able to insure. Well, you can't borrow money to grow a crop if you can't insure it.
Dee, how would you justify to the taxpaying public them subsidizing these revenue policies with the kind of incomes agriculture's been enjoying here the last few years?
Well, I think that's what would generate a lot of criticism is that, you know, how do you justify it? A lot of Main Street businesses, owners and corporate people and just rank and file, you know, people across this country, I think would stand up and say, well, you know, my income varies 10%, 15% a year. Often, why should agriculture be treated differently?
So how do you answer that then? You understand the criticism of the premium subsidies? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I didn't realize you were talking about the premium subsidies.
Yes. I mean, how do you defend that to the taxpaying public at a time when agriculture is enjoying these high, you know, earnings periods the last few years?
Okay, I thought you were talking about just the revenue plans that are out there.
No.
On crop insurance, it is a public-private partnership. You know, years ago, it was an all public. It was administered by the Farm Service Administration, and it was not a very good program. The participation was very, very low. Because now it is a public-private, we have the insurance industry administering the program, but it's helped financed by the federal government. If you look at it from a total cost, most producers would not be able to afford crop insurance. And so you get back into that situation, well, which is the cheapest route to go? Is it better to provide crop insurance or try to do ad hoc disaster bills when agriculture has major disasters like the flooding in the Missouri River last year and the drought, the historic drought we had in Texas? We had producers that didn't harvest a single thing in Texas last year, the dryland producers. And, you know, but if they couldn't afford to buy insurance, you know, on a yearly basis anyway. If they had to bear the whole cost. So it's a great public-private partnership that allows the federal government to maintain agriculture support, but at a reasonable price.
Tell me about the planting season so far in North Texas.
Well, it's progressing across the state. Downstate areas are through with corn and cotton and things. In my area, we're just beginning to start. On the way up here from Dumas, it's about 200 miles. To here at Dodge, and I saw one corn planter running, but I know there's more out there than that running, but it's just getting started, really, up in this part of the world.
What's the planting mix going to be in the Dumas area?
We're going to see more cotton. We have situations with irrigation water, cost of production, the economics. We're a non-traditional cotton-producing area. In 2002, I had no cotton. 5 years later, I had some. Now I've got quite a bit, and it increases every year across the whole area as more producers stretch their irrigation water by planting cotton.
So you see cotton as a better profit opportunity for you potentially than corn?
It's roughly about equal right now in our area.
And the water's the difference, right?
Yes, the amount of input cost. Well, actually it costs just about as much, but it's different. It's not water. It's seed technology and crop protection products and everything like that that make cotton roughly equivalent to cost production as corn.
I mean, the amount of water favors cotton because of the decline of the Ogallala.
Right. We can irrigate cotton with about 12 inches a year, whereas corn takes about 20 to 24. So it cuts our water usage in half, which is very important.
Former National Corn Grower Association President Dee Vaughn from Dumas, Texas, talking with yours truly and Stuart Doan right after the House Agriculture Committee field hearing in Dodge City. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.